hopefully we can have a better year this year overall than we had last year. And that's got to start with the answer to this question from Matthew chapter 27 there in verse number 22, the question that Pilate asks. It's a question that all of us have to answer. And I hope we'll seriously consider it. Because not just today, not just this year, but for the rest of our lives, how we answer this question, and even on into eternity, will be determined by the way we answer this question. The question, in essence, that Pilate asked is, what will I do with Jesus? That's what he asked. What can I do with him? What will I do with him? And so I want to ask you that question this morning. I want you to answer it honestly to yourself. What will you do with Jesus? We don't have it in the songbook that we're using now, but the songbook, the green ones that we used to have, had the song in it that was entitled, What Will You Do With Jesus? And I put that on your sheets for you there today. We need to think about what we'll do with Jesus. There are a number of things that we could choose to do with Jesus, and we're going to look at a few of those possibilities. But what you choose to do with Jesus will determine in the end what he chooses to do with you in the day of judgment. So you need to compare what you're doing and what you have been doing with Jesus with what you should be doing with Jesus and see what changes you need to make in your life. And let's do that together as we look at these things. I tried to get as many of the... I started out to try to make them all start with the letter E, but I ran into a couple that I had to throw in there that I couldn't find an E word for. So I stuck them in anyway. But first of all, we could choose to execute him. When Pilate asks this question, what shall I do with the one that is called Jesus, with Jesus that is called the Christ, the people screamed out, crucify him. Let him be crucified. That was their answer. We could make that choice too. When we're confronted with what am I going to do with Jesus, we could choose to just execute him. Just kill him and have it done with once and for all, and never have to make another decision about him in our lives again. What some of us don't realize is that we're on the verge of doing that. The Hebrew writer tells us in Hebrews chapter 10, and I know that this passage is often used to talk about attendance at the assemblies, and I think there is some application to that in this passage. But in Hebrews chapter 10, and beginning in verse number 26, verse 25 in particular, it talks about not forsaking the assembly. But this passage that follows it, the Hebrew writer is talking to a group of people who are leaving Christianity. They're quitting, in essence. And some that are here this morning may be on the verge of doing that. You may be about ready to quit and just give it up and just say, it's not worth it, it's too much trouble. Or you may just, you know, well, I'm not really involved anyway. I'm not really a part. It doesn't matter. I'll just quit coming. I'll just quit being involved. But notice what he says in verse 26. For if we sin willfully after we have received the knowledge of the truth, there remains no more sacrifice for sin, but a certain fearful looking for of judgment and fiery indignation, which shall devour the adversaries. Notice what he says in verse 29. Of how much sorer punishment, suppose ye, shall he be thought worthy who has trodden underfoot the Son of God and has counted the blood of the covenant wherewith he was sanctified an unholy thing. Look at what he's saying here. Look at what he talks about in this passage. That here are people who knew the truth, obeyed the truth, and they were sanctified by the blood of Christ. He says, if we reject that, if we turn away from that, then in essence, we have put him to death again. We've executed Christ again if we do that. We've just discounted that blood and thought it was unimportant and unnecessary and insignificant. Now we can choose to execute him. That's one possibility. Second possibility is we could try to expunge him. We could do what Pilate did. I'm going to wash my hands of him and be done with it. I'll just forget about it. I'm going to wash all the guilt away and I won't worry about it anymore. The only problem is that's naive. Oh, you can exclude him from your life and ignore him. You can do that. But it won't take away the guilt any more than Pilate was able to wash the blood off of his hands. You know, he said, I'm washing my hands of this. You know, it's your responsibility. Of course, the Jews said, yes, his blood be on us and our children. But you know what? His blood was still on Pilate's hands because Pilate was the one in authority. Now, Jesus told Pilate that the ones who had delivered him were guilty of a greater sin. You know, sometimes we say, well, every sin's the same. Well, the Bible does indicate that there are degrees of sin to a sort. But he said, you know, they had the greater sin. But that didn't mean that Pilate didn't have any sin or that Pilate did what was right in the situation. No, he certainly did not. Pilate had questioned Jesus, had, in essence, put him through a trial and had found nothing worthy of death in him. Now, what would we call a court system in our country today if they put somebody on trial, found nothing worthy of death in that individual, and then put that person to death anyway? We'd call that corrupt, wouldn't we? People would be screaming for that to be done away with. But that's exactly what happened to Jesus. He was tried, he was found not guilty, and then he was executed anyway. Pilate tried to expunge himself of the guilt of Christ's blood. But you can't do that when you're corrupt, as Pilate was. So we can try to expunge him and then ignore the rest. That won't work. We can try to explain him away. You know, the religious leaders of the Jews spent their whole careers trying to explain away Jesus Christ. They talked about, well, you know, he does this by the power of Satan. They talk about, well, you know, he's just a man. They said, well, he's crazy. Well, he's this. Well, he's that. They tried to explain him away, didn't they? They tried to deny him and say that he wasn't who he was. And we can do the same thing. We can try to explain him away. We can just pretend that we know something that just makes it all better. And that, no, he's not really who he claimed to be. We can deny him. We can pretend we never heard of him. We can pretend we don't know who he is like Peter did. Isn't that what Peter did? Oh, you were with him. I've never met the man. Don't even know who he is. That's kind of an absurd statement. Everybody in Jerusalem knew who he was. But Peter, I don't know him. No, I don't know anything about the man. Foolish. But sometimes we do the very same thing. Sometimes we do it in words. Sometimes we do it in actions. Sometimes we live our lives in such a way that we're telling people, yeah, I don't know Jesus. Because if we know Jesus, he's going to have an impact on our lives. If we really know him. Notice what they said about Peter. They said, your speech betrays you. So, sometimes people can tell. When Peter and John were teaching in the temple after Jesus' resurrection, people took note that they had been with Jesus. Now, how did they know that? They knew that because of something in their behavior. Something about those individuals let the people know that they've been around Jesus. And something in our behavior is going to let people know if we've really been around Jesus. Now, that doesn't mean just standing around somewhere. When he said they had been with Jesus, it meant that they had been taught by Jesus. They had spent time with him and they had learned from him. Because they were teaching in a way that was not the way that the common teachers of the day taught. It was different. Remember, Jesus taught very differently. He taught as one having authority. And the disciples no doubt picked that up from being around him, from learning from him. But we can try to explain him away. It won't work. You can explain until the cows come home. And it won't change who he is. We could mock him. That's what the soldiers did. We might use a term, eviscerate. Eviscerate literally means, you know, to cut him. That's what sometimes, you know, we talk about somebody, a cutting remark or cutting somebody down. Oh yeah, we could mock him and make fun of him and cut at him. Some people do that. Some people try to make fun of Christianity and of Christ. You may laugh about it. You know, somebody tells jokes. You may think it's funny when they tell jokes about Christ or about Christians or, you know, about religion in general. We may laugh at those things. We may mock him. But we need to understand something. The Bible tells us very clearly in the book of Galatians, God is not mocked. Whatever you sow, that you shall also reap. Oh yeah, we can laugh and carry on now, but we won't be then. We might choose to betray him. See, that doesn't start with an E, does it? We might make that choice. We might say, I'm going to sell him out. I'm going to sell out to the devil, and whatever pleasure I can get from it, I'll enjoy it now. Because life's short. Eat, drink, and be merry. For tomorrow we die, right? We know a lot of people. I know what Jesus wants me to do, but I don't care. I'm going to sell him out. I'm going to betray him. And a lot of times we do it for a whole lot less than the 30 pieces of silver that Judas got. We do it for a few moments of pleasure or to avoid a little bit of pain. And we'll sell Christ out just that quick because we think we'll get something out of it. We'll gain some advantage. We'll betray him. We could question him or doubt him. We could question his ability. Well, you know, can he really save me? We could doubt him. Is he really going to come back? There are a lot of people who do those kinds of things. And I know that all of us, at one time or another, have doubts that enter our mind. We're human. We're going to have those doubts enter our mind. But when those doubts enter our mind, do we entertain those doubts? Or do we go back to what the Scriptures say and get those doubts taken care of? You know, it's interesting that the Pharisees and the scribes and the Sadducees, they were constantly questioning Jesus, asking him this question and that question. They look, well, what if? You know, we still get those questions today. People, you know, about baptism. Well, what if somebody was going to be baptized and they died before they could? Well, what if? Sounds an awful lot like what the Pharisees and the Sadducees and the scribes did to Jesus. Well, what if a woman had married a man and her husband and he died and then she married his brother and what if? They had all the what if questions for Jesus. People try to cast doubt on what the Scriptures clearly teach with what ifs. Situational ethics. That in certain situations, what the Bible teaches isn't true. The boys in class this morning were asking me about some of those kind of things. And sometimes we need answers to some of those questions of life. But, you know, they went, well, here's what the Bible says. Well, what if this is it? What if, you know? Well, what if? What if doesn't change what Jesus said? We can question Him and doubt Him, but it won't change what He said. In that final day, we will be judged by the words He has spoken, by the things He taught, by the things He commanded and demanded of us. We'll be judged by it, whether we've ever read it or not, whether we believed it when we read it or not, whether we had an explanation to explain away whatever verse it was. We can do that all day long if we want to, but it won't change the fact. We will be judged by that. Then there are some who might choose to enclose Him or encode Him. They want to keep Him secret. They want to be disciples of Jesus, but they want to be disciples secretly. They don't want anybody else to know. Remember Nicodemus who came to Jesus by night? Why do you suppose he came at night? He didn't want anybody to see him coming. You know, that it mentions some who were followers of Jesus secretly because they were afraid, because the Pharisees had said, hey, we're going to kick you out of the synagogue if you admit that you're a follower of Jesus. Was being part of the synagogue that important? Well, it was to them. They had to keep Jesus secret. Now, obviously, that doesn't mean that, you know, if the church was being persecuted, we should run out and be hollering, hey, I'm a Christian, come get me. You know, there were some in the second century who kind of got that carried away. They wanted to be martyrs for Christ so badly that they'd go and throw themselves into the situation to be martyrs. Well, of course, if all of the Christians did that, then there wouldn't have been any more Christians. That's not the way to do it. But that means that we can't be afraid to let other people know about Jesus. We can't keep Him to ourselves. The old saying, Jesus told us that we need to keep the faith, not keep it to ourselves. We are supposed to, instead of enclosing Him and encoding Him so that nobody knows about Him, we need to be explaining Him. We need to be sharing Him. That's what we ought to be doing. Sharing Him with others. Explaining to everybody that we know and that will listen about who Jesus is and what He's done for us. The only problem is, if we're in one of these earlier categories where He hadn't had any impact in our life, there's nothing to explain. Woohoo! Look what Jesus has done for me. I only drink every other week now instead of every week. I only go to the club on Saturday night, not on Friday and Saturday night. You see, if that's what we're exclaiming, no wonder people don't want to listen. If we want the church to grow, then we're going to have to show people that Jesus has changed us. Do you remember the man who was overpowered by the demons and he lived among the tombs and everybody was scared to death of him? And I mean, they tried to chain him up and he'd break the chains. I mean, that's a strong guy. And Jesus came and healed him. And he wanted to go with Jesus, probably because he was ashamed. You know, he'd been running around naked in the tombs there. You know, that'd be kind of embarrassing after you'd been healed of that. But he wanted to go with Jesus, and Jesus said no. Jesus said, instead, you go tell what the Lord has done for you. In the denominational world, they call that testifying. For some reason in the church, everybody's here, oh, we can't say testify. That's what Jesus told the man to do. You go tell people what God's done for you. We need to do that. We need to be telling people what God's done for us. The problem is if God hasn't done anything for us because we haven't let Him into our lives, we haven't let Him change our lives, and we're just like we always were, only we go to church once every month, what is there to tell? We better wake up. Because on the judgment day, our soul is going to be asking the question, what will He do with me? And the answer is going to be, well, that depends on what you have done with Him. We need to think about it. We need to start today. It's not too late to make a New Year's resolution. Start today and make the determination, I'm not going to keep living the way I was living. I'm not going to keep living like I was yesterday. Today is a new day and I'm going to change. And instead of executing Him or trying to wash my hands of Him or trying to exclude Him from my life or trying to explain Him away or eviscerate Him or question Him or betray Him or keep Him a secret, instead I'm going to start sharing Him. I am going to start edifying Him. I'm going to build Him up. I'm going to defend Him. When somebody says something that's contrary to the Bible, I'm going to stand up and say, now wait a minute. That's not what the Bible says about that. That may be what some preacher told you, or that may be what some book you read said, but that's not what the Bible says. I'm going to edify Him. And I'm going to exemplify Him. Meaning I'm going to live Him. Galatians 2:20, Paul says, I am crucified with Christ. Nevertheless, I live. Yet not I, but Christ lives in me. I guarantee you that there are some of us sitting here today, maybe even standing, who aren't letting Christ live in us. Because He wouldn't get in our lives. He wouldn't allow Himself to be seen in the circumstances that we get into. He'd be ashamed to admit He knew who we were. Remember Jesus said, not everyone that says to me, Lord, Lord, but he who does the will of my Father in heaven. Now, you may feel like I'm raking you over the coals a little bit. Good. It's a lot better to get a few toes stepped on and stubbed here than to have to suffer for eternity. I hadn't got any coals that can even come close to burning like the fires of hell can. We need to wake up. We need to realize what's at stake here. Sometimes I think we believe this is just something we do. You know, I go to church just like I might go to a ball game or just like I might go to the grocery store. It's not really very important. I just do it because, it's kind of nice to see people it's not what it's all about. I mentioned earlier in the bulletin, those who had missed the least services and those kind of things. As I was doing that, I found some others on the other extreme. I found some people who weren't even here at church last year as many times as Sister Eura missed. Sister Eura missed 5 times. 5 times in the whole year that she wasn't here out of about 195 to 200 times that the church met. There were 5 times she wasn't here. I found some people who weren't even here 5 times. You can't even make it 5 times in a whole year? That doesn't sound like Christ is very important to you, to me. Is that the kind of importance? If you only made it to work 5 times in a month, well, they better have been the first 5 days because you wouldn't have been back. You go a day and don't show up for another week. What's going to happen on your job? We can't do that way. Why do we think we can treat God that way? Why do we think Christ is going to put up with us treating Him that way? He wants us to come and worship Him, learn about him, sing praises to him, and we show up less than once every 2 months. Or maybe once a month. Now, most months, we're here for 16, counting class and Sunday morning, Sunday night, and Wednesday night. We're here 16 hours or so, give or take a couple hours, depending on how the Sundays fall in a month and various things. 16 hours in a whole month. Well, we put in that many hours at work in 2 days. Two days. We need to exemplify Him. We need to empower Him. The old saying, God has no hands but our hands. He has no feet but our feet. He has no tongue but our tongue. The only way the gospel gets spread, the only way other people around us know about Christ is from us. Where are we? Maybe, though, we're just keeping Him along like a spare tire. We want to enjoin Him. We want to make demands of Him when it's necessary. When something bad is in our life, then I'm gonna run back to church and I'm going to ask God to forgive me and I'm going to ask Him to help me out of my bad situation. But the rest of the time, He's just like the spare tire. Hadn't paid any attention to it. Don't even know it's there. But you know what happens when you don't pay any attention to that spare tire? Then when you get a flat tire and you go to put that spare tire on, you know what you find out a lot of times? It's flat too. And it won't work. If we try to use Christ like a spare tire, we're going to get to a situation where we're going to find out we need Him, and guess what? He's not going to be there for us. What? No, he said, I'll never leave you or forsake you. Yeah, but if you've left Him, He's not going to keep hanging around. He's not going to sit around waiting on you. Remember, the children of Israel did this to God a number of times. They'd turn away from Him. They'd go worship idols. Finally, He got fed up with it. In the book of Judges, they said, oh, God, forgive us. We want to come back to you. He said, you go cry to your idols. You go pray to them. Let them get you out of it. He said, I'm sick of it. Sick of being treated this way. Why do we think that Christ is going to let us just use Him when we want to and not do anything for Him in return? Now, some of you sitting here thinking, you've endured Him for one more hour. You endured listening to what Jesus wants you to do for one more hour, and now that I've endured it, I can go home and forget about it and go on about my daily life. You go right ahead. But you're going to endure for eternity if you continue to have that attitude. You're going to endure His punishment and His wrath. Christ is forgiving. Christ is loving. He is merciful and kind. But when He comes again, He is not going to die. When He comes again, no one's going to mock Him. No one's going to spit on Him. No one's going to beat Him. When He comes the next time, Thessalonians tells us in 2 Thessalonians 1, 5 through 9, Paul says that He will come in flaming fire, taking vengeance on those who know not God and obey not the gospel. You don't want to be one of those people He takes vengeance on. He's been storing His wrath up. He's been holding off. He's been patient. He's been long-suffering. But when the time comes to let it loose, He's going to let it loose. And you don't want to be on the other end of that. If you're here this morning and you haven't been doing the right thing with Jesus, you better make up your mind. You're going to start right now. Don't say, well, I'll start tomorrow, because tomorrow never comes. Today is the day of salvation. Now not tomorrow. If you're here and you have a need to respond to the invitation for any reason, either an initial obedience to Him, maybe you've been ignoring Him all this time. You've been putting Him off, saying, oh, well, when I get around to it, I'll become a Christian. You better to quit waiting. Because Judgment Day isn't going to wait for you to get ready. You better be ready for whenever it comes. If you're here and you are a Christian, but perhaps you hadn't been living like one. Perhaps if I asked 100 people who know you if you were a Christian, not one of them would say, yeah, I wish I could be more like them. Then you better start thinking. If you're here and you need to respond to the invitation, you need to do it as we stand and as we sing.